Hello, hello, and welcome to Stoner Chicks, the podcast for stoners by stoner chicks. I'm Kayla Teal.
I'm Phoebe Richards.
I'm Stephanie Thompson.
And I'm Grace Penzel. And I'm going to cut right to the chase. We are so excited because there are six of us on this call. That's right. We have our favorite scientists back, Dr. Miyabi Shields and Dr. Riley Kirk. They just started a new research nonprofit, the Network for Applied Pharmacognosy. We couldn't be more excited to have them. Welcome to the podcast, Riley and Miyabi.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, we're so excited to be back.
It's been a couple years. It's been a little bit. 2 years.
Yeah. And you should feel proud because you're the first time we've had guests come back.
What? Oh, that's so cool. Oh, man.
So the first time Riley and Miyabi on was during the run of their incredible podcast, Smoke and Science. And then now Riley has a bioactive podcast. And there's so much more that we want to talk to the two of you about. First, we just wanted to welcome you on. And I know you all have rolled up. I'm going to smoke too. And Phoebe, you're ready to light up, but I know you have a question as well.
I do. Which am I supposed to do first?
I guess we can do it all together. What I'd like to say is I'm so happy that we're all smoking flower today.
Yeah. So wait, I'm going to ask the question while I light and inhale my joint. Okay, this is going to be real interesting.
I have to interject that I also have liquid diamonds, but I will be smoking flower as well.
Wait, what is liquid diamonds?
Oh, we'll talk later. Ask your question first, but I'm going to go on a little rant about it because I got two different types and I really like them. And I haven't tried something new in like a minute too. Like, I feel like
this sounds like mystical, magical to me.
It's pretty reproducible. I think that's why I like it. I like things that are reproducible for me. I love flower. I love that flower is not reproducible in many, many ways too. So that, you know, that's like,
I can't think of liquid diamonds without thinking about Vegas now. Like that's exactly where my brain goes when I think about it.
That's 100. Like, 100.
Is liquid diamonds a vape?
Cool.
It hits like a dab, though. It's like a vape that hits like a little more like a dab, I'd say, even though it's a vape. Because like, I don't really like vapes. I feel like I'm always on here being like, I hate vapes. And now I'm like, liquid diamonds.
I'm not a huge vapor, but like, it's nice. There's a lot of times where a vape pen is nice.
There's a lot of times when you don't want to be loud. Like, you don't want to smell like flower. You get paranoid, you know? So like, I keep a little Nick Stick vape in my car at all times. You know what
nice.
I mean?
Nice, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Just like, although I've been told that that doesn't protect you for shit. So just so that everyone knows.
Good to know. Good to know.
Well, this episode is coming out the very beginning of January 2024. And that got me thinking, for our guests, what is the best stoner season when you're thinking of the four seasons of the year?
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's advantages to every season, though. Like,
but you
come on.
Have to pick one. Them's the rules.
I think fall, because the colors are so vibrant, and when you're like high and you're looking at that beautiful like landscape, it's, and the crunch of the leaf, like there's a lot of sensory stuff in the fall. The flowers are going to seed, so they're really like crispy too. It's like it's a cool time of year.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm feeling like, for me, my opinion has changed now that I grew last year. And I went through a grow cycle and a grow season. And I kind of feel like maybe now, I feel like my answer before growing would have been winter. I think if I had done it before, because my wife and I like to go winter backpacking, and like, I don't like to sweat. And also there's like less people and the noise and everything. But then also like there's other parts of the winter is that like work is usually slower. It's like everything's a little bit slower. Well, we live on the East Coast. We live in the Northeast specifically. And the Northeast has a real cadence to the things that you do.
Dude.
And like, we do a lot more outdoors in the winter.
So I'm going to join outside in the winter is like the worst activity ever. Like, it's like when it's like,
you get really cold. You get so cold so fast, though.
Yeah, it's so cold. It's like hard to use a lighter when it's that
cold.
Yeah,
but like, I also feel like it's a great, I guess also for me, it's a great time in my house. If I had a more insulated house, it probably wouldn't matter. But I had a great time last year making hash in the winter because it's dry and cold. And so the conditions are really, really good. And so I was like doing a bunch of fun stuff. But then, so then growing though, like the actual grow season, I think changed my mind because I really, really enjoyed, I guess that would be late summer, which is like before you're gonna harvest, even though I don't really like the weather that time of year, but just the plants are freaking bountiful and huge and their bosoms are exploding.
Tell me more.
Yeah. I mean, it smells amazing. The fresh plant, growing the fresh plant, and like there's so many more compounds that are there. And that's why live products are different, right? And like, actually, I feel like it's an important PSA I'm trying to tell people is that like some of us have like irritation to cannabis when you touch the raw plant. Like if people who've ever trimmed and you get like, I can get like hives from it. Like, and it's pretty intense. And for people who get that, like we should be really careful with live products because it means that we're like sensitive to something that's in that raw plant material. And it's more likely that that would be in a live product. But I mean, I didn't know that until this year. So it's like people might not know that you have that sensitivity. But yeah, so I guess I'd say late summer just because I love the plant. I love seeing the plant alive. I love smelling the flower when it's on the plant. Love smoking the flower after the plant for sure. But when the plant is at its like most majestic, we had ones this year that were freaking like 15 feet tall. They were huge. Wow. It was like, I honestly felt godly about it. Like it felt very religious to me. And so like, I think I'm going to pick that time of year just because of that feeling.
Oh, you guys, my baby fever is acting up. I want a plant so bad.
Yeah, that is the best use of baby fever.
Kayla wants to buy a little seed and plant it and watch her weed plant grow big.
So bad. I've been growing a little orange. I'm trying to grow a little orange seed for like a year. I want it to be weed, though. I've been wondering, Miyabi, if I would have an allergic reaction to some plant, especially outdoor grown, because I have so many tree pollen allergies.
Me
that,
too.
Like the tree pollen will get on the plants and then probably fuck with me. Because sometimes I'm allergic to vegetables that are grown outdoors around trees. I'm allergic to.
And cannabis is crazy sticky. A lot of my flower this year had like, there was like stuff in it. And I was like, ah, shit. Like, there's like things flying around in the air. So yeah, that's like a really excellent point. I actually never thought about that because I am also sensitive to pollen.
Okay, like, that could be the problem. Not the actual cannabis plant, but the shit flying through the air.
That's an interesting theory. Huh. I love that. I think that's...
Although I will say it is known that people who do indoor grow facilities that are super sterile still get that hive thing. So like not... For me, we don't know for sure, but like the hive thing is for an everyone thing. I don't know that how you would protect against that in an outdoor grow because pollen is like a 5-mile situation, right, Riley? What's in it like...
Oh, yeah, I don't think you can. I think it's just part of the product. Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I like that. I prefer outdoor grow. I'm throwing it out there that I have like a crazy, not crazy, but like a pretty significant preference for outdoor grow. Although I met someone literally just this past weekend who had outdoor California grow bud structure doing an indoor grow. I've never seen that before. And I literally just smoked it for the first time and it feels great. Like, so I think maybe it's not the outdoorness. It might be like whatever it is that changes the bud structure to look like Cali outdoor grow.
Although I've had people talk to me and I wonder what you think about this. And this isn't one of the questions that I had planned to ask, but about the power of the sun and that interacting when you're growing outdoors and how that affects the proliferation, the terpenes and everything like that.
I mean... Everything it affects. That was Allison's recent study with the intercanopy lighting, essentially.
Really?
That was cool.
What's her name?
Dr. Allison Justice. She's on our scientific advisory board. She runs the Cannabis Research Coalition. And actually, she's kind of completes mine and Riley's trajectory into the plant. I don't know. Do you want to explain that?
She is brilliant. And she's a brilliant researcher. But essentially, like Miyabi's background is the body in the endocannabinoid system. And that's a system that cannabis interacts with and has so many different medicinal benefits. And mine is natural product chemistry. So the chemistry of nature in general. And Allison's is really on cultivation of the cannabis plant. Like that is what she specializes in. And she publishes some super groundbreaking research in the cultivation field that's like applicable to the actual industry. Like people can apply her research and make change that has like impacts on the quality and the price of the flower.
Okay, so this is so exciting because this is someone who's on your scientific advisory board, and this is the perfect segue into asking you about the Network of Applied Pharmacognosy, which is your nonprofit. So I was really happy when I go to your website. Right there, extremely clearly, we have pharmacognosy defined, the study of medicinal drugs from natural sources, and then in parentheses, plants, fungi, algae, bacteria, etc. So just to get that out of the way, it was so nice of you to do that for us laymen. And I think it's so wonderful that you're embarking on research. I know you have tons of plans. What are the first research projects that you are working with for this new nonprofit that you formed? And congratulations.
Yeah, we were so excited to hear you started a nonprofit. That's wonderful news.
Yeah, there is so much to this answer. There's like eight separate mini stories that go into this answer.
There's like so many. There's a pretty epic acid trip.
Right.
But I think I want to also just say, like, saying pharmacognosy, that also has significance because it's not a sexy word, but it's a really important word and it means natural product chemistry. But this word is dying out. Even the American Society of Pharmacognosy thought about getting rid of that word because nobody knew it. But it's really special to me and it's really special to a lot of people who love nature because it means like studying, appreciating, and learning and applying from nature. So just wanted to put that little side note. We wanted to bring awareness to this word. So it brings like popularity too. So people start to recognize and understand it.
Great. We could call this episode Pharmacognosy.
That would be cool.
That would be amazing. Well, so I had never heard of it and it predates pharmacology. So until I met Riley, I had never heard of pharmacognosy, but I'm a big nerd for like the roots of words and where it comes from. Right. And so cogno is like to understand or to know. And pharma is just medicine, like loosely, even magical potion, like it's a loose translation. So this predated pharmacology. And yeah, like our name, like everything about, like every word of it, we feel really strongly about is some value that we would like to bring to science that, not that science lacks it completely, but that science doesn't prioritize it necessarily. Meaning like academic science or industrial science, and that it needs like a third party advocacy based organization on the outside to do research from outside those systems that really address the consumers. So we're really excited and we're actually running our first big study right now. We published our first publication with the nonprofit already, but we are currently in the middle of recruiting for what is, we hope to be in what already, I guess, 1 month in, is the largest, most inclusive and most comprehensive cannabis consumer study that has ever been done. Because no one has ever investigated our population outside of just like trying to find out whether or not we're psychotic and or calling us addicts.
Everyone has always looked at daily cannabis use as a negative, always. Like it's never been studied as what are these group of people that react to cannabis so positively and require it daily for the betterment of their lives or to just maintain a steady state. Like what is unique about this group of people and what are their needs? We've never actually looked at that from a positive standpoint and said, how can we support these people? And that's really what this data is telling us. And it's some of the data really blew us just out of the water when we were looking at it.
That's what I was going to say. So I know from listening to your podcast that you've been able to get some preliminary findings back. What are some of a couple of the initial surprising or exciting things to learn about the needs and specificities of daily cannabis users?
Well, we'll start with the easy one. And I think Miyabi and I will just kind of switch back and forth and share some of the ones we find the most interesting. But we'll start with almost 5,000 people participating in this initial portion here. 91% of people said that they consumed cannabis every single day, if not more than once a day. So to me, that number is very validating for so many people because I've heard from so many people, hey, Riley, like, I don't know if I consume cannabis too much. Like, can you tell me what like the normal amount of cannabis is? Like, should I be doing it every day, once a week, once a month? And I think a lot of people are ashamed of this for no reason. There's no reason to be ashamed if you are a daily cannabis user. If it increases your quality of life, then I absolutely think you should use it as much as needed. And it's cool that the data also supports that from the community.
That's amazing.
It feels so good. It just feels so good to be like, yes, 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 yes. It's like us. Like, mm-hmm.
Kayla and I participated in the study. So we were part of your guinea pigs. But I don't know if this is something you saw yet or not, but it was hard for me to do it every day. So I didn't get all my every days in.
Mm. Don't worry. We clean the data every day. So actually where we're at right now is we've analyzed, you know, how in the beginning you took like a little basic demographic survey, like tell us a little bit about yourself. And then you answered those daily questions. We've gone through and we've done the basic demographic data of the first month of repliers. And then we've also done the first day. So that's where
actually,
we're not even fully done with the first day. It's a lot of data.
For all your listeners too, and for anybody wondering, you can just fill out that baseline. It takes about 10 minutes and it's just asking you questions about demographics and just you in general. And that can help us inform future studies too. So that's kind of asking questions about cannabis and driving, cannabis and neurodivergence, cannabis and pregnancy, these different questions. So when we dive into those topics in the future, if you want to be included, just fill out that baseline and at least get your email in there so we can contact you for future studies.
Yeah. And that is appliedpharmacognosy.org.
No, that's so helpful because we are having a hard time recruiting. We're facing a lot of censorship. And actually there's been like censorship issues like during the study with some people. And so the first day is actually the most important day because we likely will be publishing a good amount of the data from the first day for that reason. One of the things that I thought was one of the most interesting pieces of data was about time of day. It was 64% of people consumed before noon. And I thought that that was super validating. And also as like an endocannabinoid system specialist, like I feel the need to point out that the morning is a very specific therapeutic time to dose cannabis. It can be incredibly important for people who have lower levels of endocannabinoid tone to in the morning prevent yourself from getting a flare or prevent something that could happen otherwise. And that's not everyone. It's not going to be for everyone, but it was very nice for me to see that 64% because I wake up and I'm smoking with my coffee every morning and I have been that way for a very long time and it absolutely stabilizes me.
We have a lot of nodding heads on the Zoom call.
I mean, we get a lot of letters and messages from listeners, and so much of it is people saying, I always feel like I don't have a community, like I smoke more than other people. You're my friends, that my stoner friends. And I just think so many people carry a lot of shame and don't feel they can be open about how much weed they smoke.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of diverging a little bit from you talking directly about your research, but I just wanted to say thank you to you, Miyabi, for being as vocal as you are on social media, sharing your experience as someone who benefits therapeutically from sometimes taking on higher doses of your natural medicine on a day-to-day basis. And being okay with the idea that just because you're needing to use a little more medicine doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. And it's been really helpful for me for harm reduction. So I appreciate you. I wanted to say that personally to you.
No, that's awesome because it's like, it definitely is scary to talk about. And it's also like, people are always like, people liked the message of me being like, I'm going to use at my therapeutic minimum. And I do. I like to keep my tolerance somewhat relatively low because, you know, it's expensive. But now that I've grown, I have literally stopped caring about that 100%. And like, now I'm changing my complete perspective on that. But it's also like coming from a place of just something that I wish was available for me. And I feel like Riley and I have worked together for years and I feel very validated by the fact that like, I feel like there's nothing. I would never be judged if like we were going to have a meeting and I was like, I need to like have a dab right now, like before we have this meeting. Like actually Riley's just like, me too.
Well, I feel like we smoke like in every single meeting we have. Like
we do.
Like regardless of the situation.
I feel like we probably are just smoking all the time.
No, this is sounding very familiar. We are running a business together and that there's no shame ever for smoking at the top of a meeting or whenever.
It makes for better meetings, better ideas. You're having fun. Like it. That's why and it's also just what we've kind of been waiting for in working together. Like we knew this was going to be the work culture of being like, let's just smoke, get creative, and then just be productive and have a successful business together. It doesn't need to be sterile and like, it doesn't need to be like any other company we've ever worked for. We're kind of creating our own space and it feels amazing. It's so freeing that we were able to do this together and like create real change.
I mean, it is an accommodation. Like also it's like, it's straight up an accommodation. And I really want to like continue to use that language because that's a legal mandate for disabilities. Mm-hmm. Like it's an accommodation. Cannabis is absolutely a workplace accommodation and it should be. And I think like, especially networking and social events and things that like require like high stimuli experiences, like some brains just like don't handle it. But like, so there was the acid trip. The second thing on the nonprofit was we came up to go hiking and Riley lives in paradise up in the like in this most amazing, most beautiful White Mountains. And we stopped by after our hike and Riley and I had like arranged to meet. Like we were like, let's meet. Like, why aren't we working together again? Let's have a meeting. Then like we get back there and Riley's like, I don't have any more meetings. And I'm like, should we just go like smoke and like lay in your river? Like,
yeah.
That's what we did.
I think we chilled for like 4 hours. Like we were just like smoking, hanging out. And then at the end of that 4 hours, there was like a really intense 20 minutes. And I'm not joking. I think it was that 4:20 split. It was 20 minutes of like, and then boom. And Riley's like, I'm getting my iPad. And I was like, yeah, get the iPad. Like
I literally was like, I'm going to get my iPad. And we just like cranked out work for like 20 minutes and we were incredibly productive. And that is the balance. You have to play in order to be able to be productive and not play. Like you got to have the balance.
Exactly. And on that note, considering this is a production session for our business, I want to hear more about your research, but we need a smoke break. So everybody have a smoke break. Welcome back from your smoke break, listeners. I have a very yappy and opinionated little dog in the background. So podcast Angus, he's also a science man and he's very excited that we're here as always with our guests. Not as always, but today, Riley Kirk and Miyabi Shields. I did smoke on our smoke break. I hit a bong that had some THC bomb in it. So I'm pretty mellow right now. But I want to know more about your research. So what are some other things that you found out from your preliminary research?
Yeah, I wanted to share actually how unique the demographic was again. I mean, we mentioned that this is kind of the stoner neurotype because we have these 5,000 people who use cannabis daily. But what was interesting is it was about 50% LGBTQ community members.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was about 72% people who identify as neurodivergent. So again, these are two other populations of people that really aren't represented in science a lot. And we see this huge overlap here. So again, like, what does this mean for this community? How can we understand this better?
I feel like for those of us who are in the like deep in the stoner community, it's like, well, yeah, like who has chronic pain and chronic mental health and chronic GI issues? It's like, of course, there's like intersectionality because there's compounding factors in life that make you more statistically likely to have any of those things. And so this was a really impactful thing that we found because when it comes to cannabis, we're talking about multiple stigmatizations here now. We're starting to talk about multiple negative stereotypes and multiple opinions of people and multiple reasons why people can discriminate you. And that's not even touching the person of color thing that cannabis has going on, which arguably is the biggest thing. So that piece of information was super interesting. And what we're calling the stoner neurotype is because we are the first data set. We're the first study ever that is specifically looking at us as a neurotype.
And there is something that is unique among this group of people. I mean, cannabis acts on your endocannabinoid system in your brain. Like, there is a reason why all of us are reacting so positively to using this plant. It is a neurotype. We have similar brains and we really should study it.
When you meet someone and you're like, do you smoke? That's like the first question, right? Or like, it's like one of, for me, it's like, it's one of the first ones. It's like, do I want to keep talking to you? What are our chances of ever having more than 30 seconds of conversation? But I mean, it's like this thing that it's interesting because it has been studied as a neurotype, as a negative neurotype, as either like substance use disorder, like addicts, or as psychotic, or as basically emotionally volatile, right?
You're right. Like,
the way that we do stuff.
We all have cannabis use disorder here. Congratulations, everyone.
Congratulations, everyone.
It's true that like the stoners will find each other. And like, as a queer person, even growing up, I've always been surrounding myself with queer people since I was like 7, 8 years old. Like, I feel like we were able to find each other without even really knowing it. But it makes sense if you talk about neurotypes matching kind of naturally in the wild.
So true. And I mean, the other thing too, we think about neurodivergence just in general, there is in general across all types of neurodivergence, like a more difficult understanding of social norms because there's like social norms don't apply to you because you're not within that social norm. So because you're not within it, in general, neurodivergent people are outside of it. And so it makes sense that then it's more likely to be queer. You're more likely to be queer. You're more likely to be outside.
Think right? Outside the norm. Yeah, 100%.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, or be more creative, right? Like, I think we said it was like a highly creative neurotype. So there's actually also another split in the neurotype that we think is really interesting. So it's the stoner neurotype, and we clearly have a lot in common. But when it comes to THC consumption, there are two different levels of stoner neurotypes. There are what is called, what one of our friends, Evan, calls low responders and high responders. So if we looked at our data from the daily use, which was just the first day we were looking at, in general, also another fun fact, people tended to use more on their days off than when they were working. And while I think that that just makes sense, right? Everyone's like, okay, cool. Like on your day off, you can like definitely relax and everything. You can up your dose. Like on one hand, that makes total sense. On the other hand, it's a statistic that points to like work environments, like not being properly accommodating for neurodivergent adults. So it's just a statistic saying that like in general, people are using more on their days off. Is their quality of life higher on their days off? I mean, there's a lot of reasons why your quality of life might be higher on your day off, but
we have that data. It's so cool.
So great.
Yeah, no, it's cool. I mean, it's data that can be used for advocacy, right? Like it's things that we can finally point to and be like, yeah, we need to be able to smoke weed. Like if you inhale as your method of delivering cannabis to yourself in the best way, which for me, that's the best therapeutic profile. I probably need to be able to smoke every hour to 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to step outside and redose myself. And I'm not high. I am just medicated so that I can do all the things that I do. And I mean, like my quality of life has gone through the roof since I've been able to properly dose my medicine at the dosage that is appropriate for me to maintain my mental and physical well-being. So there's two different types. There's people who are low responders who smoke about one bowl a night, like, or during a day, or like, so that's like 250 milligrams or so. It's like a quarter of a 1 gram pre-roll. There's a little hump of people like that. They probably are also overlapping with the people who take like 5 milligrams, right? Like you have like a 5 milligram gummy edible. And then we see another peak at the 1+ gram range of flower, which is where we're at, right? And then another peak at like the, say, 50 to 100 milligram edible dosage. So within the stoner neurotype, there are different like clusterings, if you will. And I mean, it's not like distinct. It's not like you're one or the other because you're never one or the other. Like also, hope everyone knows that. It's never just like this or that. So there's like a lot in between, but we thought it was really interesting that there were these, because we assumed so based on how many people, you know, and how we are and all the people that we know and all the people we know who smoke weed every day.
Ooh, also speaking of edibles, our previous data from TikTok that we took years ago that we talked about was about, before we said about 20% of people couldn't feel edibles. which is amazing. Like, that statistic has never been published. We figured that out from social media. And we thought that number was extremely high. I mean, think of if any other like drug didn't work for 16% or 20% of people, like that would be significant.
Like 1 out of 5.
Right. That's significant.
So one of us shouldn't be able to fail edibles. I guess.
Anyway. Look, we have one. That's so
crazy. Oh, damn. Statistics.
That
wow.
That's crazy. So we wanted to repeat that on this survey because we knew on social media there could be overlap between our accounts. People might have voted twice, you know, whatever the case. But this data showed about 16% of people couldn't feel edibles, which again, that's still significantly high and worth researching and figuring out why this is. Is it your liver enzymes? Is it your gut microbiota? Is it if you consume it with food or not? What is the reason for that 16%? So that's something we definitely want to pursue in the future as an individual study project.
I also think it validates the social media data because we pulled it across different platforms and we had, I think it was 18 to 21% where it was the range. And while we did not publish the social media data in the peer-reviewed literature, I'm pretty sure we would have been laughed out for trying.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm pretty sure we got laughed at for even saying it. However, at the time there, and still now, there's none of this data is in the peer review. None of this data is in the scientific literature, which means that like no scientists think that it's valid, even though the social media data set was like 20,000 and this 4,000, 5,000 data set.
People don't know it exists.
15% it's the only data though. So it is this, it's this really complicated thing where I think it's like, I think that data should happen in academic settings and have a high rigor. Absolutely. But we are in a massive lack of data because of prohibition that we are still in. We are still in a prohibition. And so we are in this massive lack of data. We are also in this massive, like horrible education, like hole. There's like a void in our education about cannabis that has been, it's plagued an entire generation. And it's for the younger generation who can approach it more differently. It will only change if we change the way we're educating them, which we have not yet.
But that's what you're doing currently. Like, it's so awesome that you have this data now. And it's amazing to me that no one's ever like done this before. It's wild.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, like, in terms of kind of uncovering on a preliminary basis, this new neurotype or the idea of stoners as a neurotype that needs to be taken seriously for medical treatment or just like access needs in the world, like you were saying, Miyabi, what level of research would you need to get to, or would there need to be, what are you aiming for this to be taken more widely in our nation, in the world, so that we can get it applied to medical treatment and science in a more widespread way? That might be a really huge question. I'm sorry. I'm stoned.
That's a very, very difficult one because what we need is respect. And that's something that people will be like, respect is won and not given. And it's like, respect is absolutely given. And it's the dollar signs that you were born with when you went into this world. It's a really powerful moment to say, like, we're going to come together as a unit and we are going to be a force. Because in addition to it being like just a very complex, high needs medical patient, that is in general what a stoner is. In addition to that, we are the most knowledgeable consumers. We are probably the best community educators, and we are likely the most beneficial introductory relationship that anyone can have with cannabis is through a friend who is a stoner and not through a medical professional who doesn't know anything about the plant, right? Because your friends also know you, again, with the neurotype matching situation. So I think that one of the first steps in us bringing to light the stoner neurotype and what that can mean in terms of like medical advocacy and what that could mean in terms of like gaining power as a group and as a community. I think that first step would be for it to be recognized that we are educated and nuanced. We were talking earlier about what dabs feel like in general, right? And we're all like laughing, but we all know what dabs feel like, don't we? And not everyone does who teaches about dabs. So it's just this community, this lived experience, this community knowledge that we contain is incredibly important. And I'm really excited for what our data set can do to point that out, because next, like, we have all these plans for the future, but like one of the plans that we have is to like truly dig down and investigate some of these real biochemical questions that we have had for a long time that, you know, people were always saying in the couch. And like, that's like an overly simplified one. I don't know if that's one. I don't know if we'll touch sativa, indica, or hybrid yet. Cause it's again, like, what isn't a hybrid these days? But I do feel like we will be able to bridge this gap between the biochemical and the human data in a new and different way, because we actually have a community that can tell the difference between different experiences. And it's known that we are more experienced and that we have more subtle, nuanced experiences between us because we have that history. We have that like personal knowledge.
Well, thank you so much for doing this research. I have about 1.5 million questions, but really as briefly, I guess, as I can ask about this, I was curious, Riley, I was listening to an episode of Bioactive where you were talking to someone about CBD products. I can't remember the guy's name. Shoot.
Kyle Jones from Future Compounds.
Yeah.
Kyle Jones
from Future Compounds.
Send me that pure.
And you were talking about trying to figure out as a consumer the best CBD to be in, and some of the differences between Delta 8 and how that stuff is processed. It has come up for me and for Steph too, that in the past when we've taken Delta 8 products, we've ended up feeling pretty crappy in different ways.
I got a headache once from a Delta 8 product.
I got a
major
8.
Headache and had a meltdown in an airport in TSA security.
Oh no.
Well, because you can't bring liquids, and I had finished my water bottle before even the line got there, and my mouth was so dry, and I was also like not feeling well, and I just needed water, but I couldn't drink any water. Anyway, I had a meltdown.
Oh, sorry that happened, especially in an airport, dude. Yeah.
Dry mouth, a desert mouth.
I was kind of wondering, because we do have a lot of listeners in prohibition states and that sort of thing. Is there a way to navigate the territory of alternative products like that, hemp-derived products like that, in terms of finding something that wouldn't make you feel crappy? Or is there any way around that? Or is it safer to stick to just THC products and CBD companies like Kyle's, where you can see the process really transparently of how they clean their CBD and everything?
Oh man, this is such a loaded question. Because
I'm so sorry.
No, it's just such an injustice that we don't have cannabis access for everyone in the United States. Like, that makes me so sad. I hate to hear this.
It is a relationship with the earth that we should never have been severed in the first place. And
making nature illegal is out of control. Like, that is the number one reason we should be able to have full access, everyone, to mushrooms, cannabis, any sort of plant, fungus, bacteria, whatever you want. Nature, we are nature. We should have access to nature. That is a fundamental right.
Yeah. And no one should be jailed for nature.
We evolved here together.
Okay. I'll get back to the question. I hate that synthetic cannabis products are the only thing available to people because we outlawed nature. It drives me insane.
And they can be unclean.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So on that point, there are some unclean products out there because Delta 8, HHC, Delta 10, all of these different
XO.
Yeah, there's like 50. But like, all of these products, they're made by taking, typically it's CBD as a starting material, introducing heat and acid, and then turning them into these other psychoactive compounds like Delta 8 THC. If you clean that up correctly and you have just Delta 8 present in that final product, there's nothing inherently wrong with Delta 8 THC. It's just as safe as Delta 9 THC. It's a compound that exists in nature as well. The issue is, during this process of synthesizing Delta 8 THC, if you don't clean up that final product, you're also creating dozens of other byproducts. And we know nothing about the safety of those byproducts. Those byproducts weren't made by nature. They weren't made by a plant. Those byproducts were made by introducing chemicals to a pure compound in a laboratory. So not only those compounds, but residual solvents as well. We need to make sure that there's, well, these could be present in the final product. And I think that's where some of these side effects come from, the headaches, the weird side effects. Or another thing is Delta 8 products are regulated, if regulated, not the same as the products in the legal market. And because of this, the doses are going to vary a ton. You might find like a 50 milligram Delta 8 gummy. You might find a 30, 100. Like they can go a lot higher than ones that you see in the legal market, because the legal market is highly, highly, highly regulated. But this kind of gray space of these hemp products are less regulated. So again, if you find a good Delta 8 product that only has Delta 8 THC, there's nothing wrong with that. The issue is it's really, really, really hard to tell what that final product is. And oftentimes you'll hear people say, well, just look at a COA, a certificate of analysis, which is a document that comes with your product that shows you that it is just a pure compound. There's only Delta 8. There's no residual solvents. It's safe to consume. But those can be fabricated too. So
it's so
really
hard
other than reputation to say like how to find a company, which is why I try to have people like Kyle on my podcast. So he can talk about, and people can hear him talk about the quality of the products at Future Compounds, and that he has so much pride in the product. And I think that comes across, and he is willing to share that with anyone. Anyone can analyze his products and they'll see that it is a pure compound. He'll share it with research institutes. You know, they're accredited by everyone you could be accredited by, and they work closely with a research laboratory.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. So somebody like that who's open and outward and successful with their company for being transparent, that's how you find a good company for these products.
But even still, I don't know if I would do it if I didn't know him. Now that I know him and I've seen that level of rigor, like, and same with the only synthetic products I've ever tried, I've been one scientist away from their scientist. Does that make sense? Like, I've had a personal knowledge because I completely agree. Like, I think that the traceability is important. And I mean, it's also, if you just look at the work that Kyle is doing everywhere, it's everywhere. But it's frustrating because, again, this comes from lack of access to like a natural plant. And I just wanted to say for any of your listeners that are in the Appalachia region, that there is a nonprofit called Legalize Appalachia. And we know Jamie, shout out to Jamie.
Awesome. She's awesome.
And just that there is, and I feel really strongly about this too. Like, my wife has family in South Carolina, right? And it's just, this is a socioeconomic health disparity, health inequity problem. Like, this is like an issue. And if you look at the states that have it and that don't have it, it's a problem. This is a problem.
It seriously is. And so I really appreciate you speaking to it. I know it's complicated. And also, that's why I would highly recommend the Bioactive podcast, Riley,
thanks,
that you have, where you are interviewing experts in the field. So shout out to that. Thank you for taking the time to say that. One last thing before I wrap up is that, Miyabi, I also want to just point shout out that you do so much work in the psychedelic sphere and advocating for psychedelics as medicine. I was listening to an episode from 2021 that you were on, and you were talking about the sort of magical nature, the ineffable nature of some psychedelics, and specifically the way that a serotonergic psychedelic experiences happen, the way that these compounds are acting on our serotonin receptors. I don't know. I just really loved it. And I wanted to thank you also for bringing a little bit of the magic. I just wanted to give you space to just briefly speak to, I guess, what you're working on in terms of psychedelics and where we can find you and your work.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I'm actually speaking and co-hosting at the second annual Neurodivergent Psychedelic Conference, which is it's going to be online. It's February 3rd, but it's ndpsychedelic.com. That's the website if anyone wants to check it out. We're going to release the rest of the speakers, I think, in the next couple of weeks. And I'm really, really excited. So And then also our nonprofit, the Network of Applied Pharmacognosy, like, we have plans of doing research in all natural realms of pharmacognosy. We are specialists in cannabis and in the endocannabinoid system, and we've spent a lot of our research career. We have a lot of questions that we want to answer in cannabis.
Oh, but wait, can I?
The moment that we have the ability.
I want you to keep going about plugging everything you're doing because it's amazing. But also, if you do want to donate to our nonprofit, you can head to our website and you can make a donation if that's something that you want to help us on this journey.
Incredible. Yes.
So that's appliedpharmacognosy.org. Again, if the bark, every time I say it, my dog barks. Appliedpharmacognosy.org.
Beautiful.
He's a fan. He's a fan. He's a stoner.
Yeah.
Angus the
stoner. He could use it probably anyway. But that's another story for another time.
So my talk that I'm giving this year is titled Perfecting the Business Trip, Psychedelics for Neurodivergent Networking and Professional Development. And let me just start by saying that I've never once had a psychedelic experience without cannabis. So the two, they shall be together.
Yeah.
Forever.
I want to hear so much about the presentation that you're going to give, but I kind of maybe to give a little teaser so that people can go to the website and follow your work when it does get presented in February. I wanted to ask the two of you to, at what point in your trip, you have a very specific game plan when you were at MJ BizCon with your psychedelics. At what point in your trip do you deploy cannabis?
Oh, we're always using 24/7
immediately
all the time. Like
we dosed to get on the plane. Like we planned our dosages accordingly.
Like on your psychedelic trip.
Like we used cannabis before, but we also typically when you're using psychedelics, at least for us, you can smoke a lot more than normal. So like if we're going to be out and about,
without anxiety,
not only do we all have pens, like carts, like locked and loaded, but we also roll up like ahead of time to prepare for that. So we're like meal prepping, but for cannabis,
cannabis.
Respect.
Well, yeah. I love that.
Trip prepping. Oh man. But let me just give a little PSA that if you are not super experienced with cannabis, if you are not super experienced with psychedelics, the two potentiate each other. The endocannabinoid system and the serotonin system work very closely together. For people who are just getting started in the very, very beginning, even if you're a stoner, there's a chance you might react strongly. Actually, it is known, or it's at least been published in literature for a while now, that those of us that smoke a lot of weed have a higher co-occurrence together of CB1 receptors and serotonin 5-HT2A and 2C receptors. And those are the receptors known to cause the psychedelic effects of psychedelics. So that being said, what does that mean? I don't know. We don't know yet what that means, which is exciting. But I think it has to do with mysticism. I've thought it has to do with mysticism for some time. But if you were just starting out and there was a question of someone being like, oh yeah, I'm not a medical professional. This is not medical advice. I'm not telling anyone to do anything. Check your laws and your local locations before you do anything. So that being said, if someone was curious about microdosing and was like, oh, I have no idea. I'm kind of scared. I don't want to trip. Take less than you would ever take to feel anything. Take 30 milligrams of mushrooms. Go get a nice scale. They only cost $20 and make sure you're taking a sub-threshold dose, something that's almost nothing. And then if you smoke weed and you feel almost nothing, smoke weed. You'll probably feel something. You'll at least feel the weed be a little bit different. Feel a slight change. I mean, I don't know, 30 is pretty low, so maybe you won't. But in the worst case scenario, you took 30 milligrams, which is 50 cents. I don't even know. So you took 30 milligrams and then you were like, oh, I didn't feel anything. Now I feel safer to take 50 or now I feel safer to take 70, right? So that's the correct situation. It's not oh, let me just down this eighth. We need to ease into it. And then if you are in a situation where you are quote unquote coming up, right? I have heard it being said that people will be like, oh, I get nauseous when I'm coming up. It's very common. You have the most serotonin receptors in your stomach and it's a common serotonergic thing. So if you have that stomach discomfort, we smoke. And I know a lot of people who would be like, definitely smoke. But that's not true for everyone. I don't think everyone should definitely smoke. And that when you are coming up, smoking might not be the best time for you because it could make it really intense. And if you're not ready for that, or if you're not in the right setting for that, or if you haven't prepared, or if you don't feel safe enough, or you have too many obligations going on in the next depends on what you're on, but sometimes 12 hours, right? So like, it can be really intense. And I just think that's worth saying that we are, yes, always using weed all the time. That is just kind
of, especially when we're together.
Yeah,
especially
when we're together. Yeah. No, that's true. That's also very, very true. And then like Vegas is its own thing. It was so stimulatory that the whole thing was a trip anyways. Like,
it's fun taking psychedelics in Vegas.
Well, thank you so much, Riley and Miyabi, for dropping in for a dose of education and celebration of plant medicine and cannabis. We always love hanging out with you. Follow Riley at Cannabichem on Instagram or TikTok, and follow Miyabi at Miyabi PhD. And then, of course, check out appliedpharmacognosy.org to get involved with their nonprofit and their research. I can't wait to hear more. I could talk to you for hours. Thank you for being on Stoner Chicks podcast.
Thanks for having us. Had a great time.
Yeah, this was fun.
I love this podcast so much. But my my dyslexic speech impediment brain like still cannot say fobmedicobinizy. And I'll get it someday.
I think that should be a shirt for us. I want to make that a shirt.
But I've always thought my entire life since I was a little girl that we would find the answers to the universe in the Amazon rainforest. I've now expanded that to every like living thing on the planet. So just have this, the connection to nature, and like we can find medicines there. We can look at the construction of a coral reef and figure out engineering things. You know, just everything is there and it's so beautiful. And I just, y'all with your big brains bringing that out in me just makes me feel special. Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. Please, if you like this episode, take the time to rate and review us on Apple or Spotify. It really helps us out. And if you leave a 5-star review, we will read it on the podcast. If you want more of us, come to our website at stonerchickspodcast.com, where you can find out upcoming shows, sign up for email lists, buy merch, see what hats and mugs we have. You can get a smoke your weed hat. That's really cool. We all got one. And Patreon, if you want to see more of this episode, you can sign up for Patreon. We'll have a smoke break of us just chilling and
talking about more of the research that Riley and Miyabi didn't have time to talk about on the podcast.
So. Yes.
Yeah. Not going to lie. It's pretty good.
It's real good.
Probably had it over
like,
there.
I feel like I'm like a little scared. People are going to go over there. We talked about some shit.
We spilled some tea. So
I forgot we were on a smoke break.
So that's patreon.com/stonerchicks. And we have bonus episodes and tons of other perks over there. Smoke sesh every month. Woohoo.
Now, Phoebe, what do stoner chicks always say?
I already felt pressure. Now I feel even more. Smoke lots of weed and learn about science, says Phoebe.
Check it out at Applied Farm Nacobnacy.
There you go. That's definitely what stoner chicks say.
Smoke your weed, everybody.
I'm going to make the t-shirt with a corn crop.
A crumb crop is what I heard.
Stoner Chicks podcast is hosted by me, Grace Penzel, Stephanie Thompson, Kayla Teal, and Phoebe Richards. The show is edited by German at Your Podcast Editor, and the theme music is composed by Jessica Damari. Email us your high thoughts at stonerchickspodcast@gmail.com or send us snail mail at P.O. Box 80586, Seattle, Washington 98108. Please follow us on social media at Stoner Chicks Podcast on Instagram or broadcast.